Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And this, like all podcast shows here at WFYI, are available on Spotify. Ladies and gentlemen, I am happy to say this is a Film Sociology Thanksgiving tradition. We talk about food and family and films and other things that start with F and don't start with F. But back in the studio, back on the studio phone, I should say, is a restaurateur, a chef, a TV personality, a husband, a father, my favorite maple leaf, and that is not a version of Snowflake. Please welcome back Danny Boom. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Well, once we get the phones working, they're not bad.
That's right, buddy. Well, I mean, this is 7 years. 7 years we've been doing this.
I know.
It's crazy.
So did you submit your resume to the Maple Leafs?
I did. I even came out with some great catchphrases. If no one in Indianapolis knows what the Maple Leafs are, it is one of the greatest world's ice hockey teams. And the coach just got fired, and I said, you know, I am the man. I am the man for that job, but no, they said, get back in the kitchen, Boomer. We need you there. So I said, okay.
Well, that's okay, because your lovely wife and I are sitting in the back watching the standings and eating Haagen-Dazs for misery.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to say, my wife is gleefully looking down on me from the Red Wings, the Detroit Red Wings right now, and saying, you know, you took the guy that made it for us, now he ruined it for you. Yeah, he's got to fix it. And it's like, oh, my God. So, you know, the thing with sports rivalry, though, and when we get to it, it's kind of a funny thing when you have a house divided, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, the house divided thing is like, especially with football and all these other great things that happen, is that I don't know. I think there's that sneakingly, like, feeling deep down where the eyebrow is raised all the time and people are down there looking and judging you. And I'm like, you know what, I can live with that, because you know what, I'm in for the whole game. I'm in for the whole season. I'm in for the whole lifetime of the franchise. I'm good to go.
Exactly. Well, I guess to start with, because we're recording this right at the beginning of the week, what is the Boom Thanksgiving dinner going to look like this year?
Well, we're doing something, I would say, rather risque. We're doing lamb for our Thanksgiving. You know, I'm getting pretty sick of the turkey every year. My wife's very traditionalist, and I'm always trying to push the boundaries. And what you notice actually in the supermarket this year is right next to the turkey, they're offering duck, mm-hmm. which I found rather intriguing, because I thought that's a big cultural shift in America when you go to the supermarkets or, like in my restaurant, Drifters, you have these, the purchase guys are coming in and saying, well, how about duck this year for offering for Cornish hen? And I'm like, really? You know, everyone seems to be moving away from turkey. So it's kind of an interesting shift for us. And I'm kind of looking forward to a bit of like lamb at this time of year. It's a little bit different.
So, well, how big a gathering you're going to have? Because if it's just you guys, then you don't have to deal with, you know, everybody has their own path as what they expect or what they want for Thanksgiving. How big a group will you have?
This year I don't know if I've made the right choice in friends to invite over. I'm going to, it's between me, you, and everybody else there. But I had my roommate from New York. I said to him, you know, Mark and Vanessa, who are Remy's godparents, I said, I think it's time that you came up to visit us, because, you know, it's been a while. and we need you to come spend time with the family. So we one second. True for live radio. I'm actually getting a ticket in a car lot while I'm here. So okay. So I do this every time to you. I do something live. This is real happening, people.
Yep.
So anyway, I said to Mark, come on up. And then he's the fussiest eater in the world. he's had a gastric band placed in, so he doesn't eat as much. And he went from 350 pounds down to 180 pounds in the last 2 years. So he's like, all of a sudden he's eating again, but he's a little bit fussy, A, and then B, he doesn't eat so much. So it's like, okay, that's the first problem. Then his wife, she's brilliant. She's a gastronaut like all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay, so what we're going to, like, what do you want to feel like, Vanessa? What are we going to, tantalize you with? And again, everyone was like, well, yeah, I want mashed potatoes with peas in it. Like Megan saying, she wants a green bean casserole, which I do not understand how that ever became popular dish in this
country. That's okay, me too.
I don't get it. I just don't get it, Matt. I don't, like, who decided to do this? I don't get it. Must be a Midwestern thing. And then what else did we do? Then we did, we said, right, we're going to do lamb. I've taken everybody's considerations. I've thrown them out the window. And this is what I say to everybody every Thanksgiving. You dictate the play, right, at the end of the day. If you're going to put all the time and the effort into putting on Thanksgiving dinner, don't submit to everybody's request. Do something. Do everything that you know that is manageable and that you know that you can do. So I'm like, I basically just went traditional route, went with my lamb. We're going to have a great lamb. We're going to do a mini turkey crown for those who want turkey, because the kids like a little turkey. And then away we go from there, you know. But the most important thing with your side dishes and everything, I'm doing roast potatoes. I'm doing baked butternut squash with polenta and truffle mushrooms, which is to die for. we're going to do beautiful garlic bacon Brussels sprouts. And then a little kale and farro mixed in, so everything basically can blend into a salad afterwards.
How long will the Brussels sprouts swim in butter?
Oh, they're going to go for a nice bath. Let's put it like that. They're going to go for a bath for about a good 20, 25 minutes.
Okay.
Roast up. Yeah, you know. And the funny thing is, Matt, you know, like, I'm partnering with Hilton now. And we're opening up my first restaurant up in Rochester, where I live, in the Hilton Garden Inn in Rochester. And so it's been really weird because for the first time, I normally test recipes and set trends through the shows that I do.
Right.
But this time it's like, okay, I've actually got to really, really think about what everybody eats and what everybody would come into and buy. So it's trying to make food really attractive again and basically really appealing to everybody. And then it comes down to, it trickles down. Because when I'm now making everything at home, I'm actually thinking three steps ahead of, would I serve this, would I sell this, or will the family eat it? And if the family eat it, then I know I can sell it.
It's the cooking equivalent of marry, F, and kill.
Yes, it absolutely is. I told you, we said we wouldn't be talking about F words. There we go. Yeah.
I was talking with a coworker earlier because I still don't get the green. I'm a lifelong Midwesterner, and I don't get the green bean casserole. And I think part of it was because of our childhood. A lot of vegetables were just cooked to death, and it just has left a lasting stigma. Last year, my Lynn and Emma and I were at a restaurant in Cincinnati. And we were given a sample of a Brussels sprout that felt like it was like bathing in butter for half a day. And I had it, and it ruined Brussels sprouts for me. I'm never going to find one as soft and as good as this one. And that was another thing that was cooked to death when we were younger.
Yeah, well, Meg's from Detroit. And the funny thing is, with Meg being from Detroit, is that she said most of the vegetables that she ever got were from a can.
Yep.
And I was like, what? And I came from a really rural area, and everything was always off the back of the truck. Like, you know, literally bags of potatoes and carrots and Brussels sprouts would fall off the back of the tractor going from the field to the farm, and we would, that would be our, whatever we'd be having for the rest of the holiday period.
Right.
So it was like, wow, you know, like you'd only have certain things at a certain time.
Well,
and I was amazed. And then that's where it comes from, though, because it was ease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Meg's Aunt Joyce's mashed potatoes have 7 different cheeses in it and cream cheese. I'm like, what are you doing? No wonder everyone's having heart attacks. You know, it's crazy.
Well, Megan, being from Detroit, she knows that other items came off the back of trucks in her neighborhood.
And she knows how to use a shift, too. So, you know, she's
for the record, I'm from Flint. I can make these jokes sort of, kind of. So, I guess, so will you have your cranberry salsa? I know that is a fairly recent recipe on DannyBoom.com.
Yeah, well, I work with Dr. Oz 2 or 3 times a month, and you might see me on his show because it's syndicated. And he actually gave me a couple of really good challenges. So what I do normally with Dr. Oz is I take a recipe and I make it healthier. So we wanted to make basically cranberry sauce, and this is kind of amazing, has around, the average can of cranberry sauce has around 22 grams of sugar.
Ooh.
That's nearly a cup of sugar in each can. And then that's the equivalent to 2 glazed donuts. So he said to me, you know, like, Dan, how do we make this healthier? Because there's a lot of diabetics out there that can't really, believe me, 1 teaspoon of cranberry sauce could spike your insulin.
Right.
So I was like, okay, well, how are we going to work this out? So what we did is we came up with cranberry salsa. You can get it off DrOz.com, and it's under my name. It's Danny Boom Cranberry Salsa, and you can also go to DannyBoom.com and get the recipe too. And the cranberry salsa basically is, generally what they do with cranberry sauce is you make it like jam or jelly, and you put it with sugar water, and it releases the pectin, and then you may use a little cornstarch to thicken it up. And what we did was we made a salsa. So we put the cranberries, orange, basil, cilantro, jalapeno, I'll get to that in a second, and some honey, and we throw that into the blender, chop it all up and make it like a rough salsa,
mm-hmm.
and then you put that on. And then, so basically what you've done is you've not released all the sugars, and the honey takes all the tartness away, and you still get the beautiful blend of flavors that cranberry gives you. You get this, so basically a little sweet, a little tart, but then the jalapeno is really important, because the jalapeno is to basically get your metabolism working. And obviously, if you don't like it too spicy, you put a little extra honey in. And what that does is, because the honey smooths everything through and takes the heat away, but the heat that you generate from the jalapeno actually will help you digest turkey faster. So you won't get the turkey slump, as I call it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's probably one of the reasons why people like hot sauces, because there is some endorphin rush. And
oh,
I think,
God, yeah.
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 And I think
that's right.
There's also the sweet and heat thing. I mean, I'm a fan of chicken and waffles. I like Nashville hot chicken. So anytime you can mix those things, you know, and I think it goes back to when you have syrup on your sausage or on your bacon, that two combinations.
Yeah. And what was kind of interesting about the whole looking into cranberry, I mean, I even went to the cranberry bog and stood in the cranberry bog, and it was like, it's 200 cranberries per can. And when you think about 200 cranberries, God, that's a lot of cranberries. But then when you're in the middle of the bog, it's over 1 billion cranberries in one bog. And so when you're making everything, you're thinking, well, you're constantly thinking is, what? How do you flavor combination against the tartness of those cranberries? I mean, you say the sweet and the heat, the sweet and sour, they always really do appeal to people. So a little sweet, a little heat, and a little sour, I think you've got a very, very nice combination on your plate, because you only need a little bit to then do the crunch, you know, take the crunchiness of those roasted Brussels sprouts or that beautiful glazed up skin or something like that.
So it's the never-ending battle between quality versus quantity. I always talk to college students about that when it comes to their liquid consumption, but it sounds like that should also be discussed at Thanksgiving.
That's very true, Matt. You always should go quality over quantity.
You know, do you want a 6-pack of Kraft stuff, or you want a case of something that, you know, is like a urine sample? I understand
that. You know, but everybody wants to get from A to B quick. That's the thing, isn't it? You know, actually, it's kind of funny talking to some of the mums at the school drop-off the other day, because we have a drink up here called Thunderball, which is like a cinnamon schnapps.
Ooh.
And snow the 10th of November. So it gets pretty cold up here.
Yes.
And it was funny, like, when you're saying get your over quantity and quality, is like, there's some of the mums putting the Thunderball in the hot chocolate to warm themselves up on the school drop-off. And I'm like, wow, okay, This is how the day's going to go. That's good.
So, all right, this Thunderbolt, is this going to take away the stigma of Fireball? Because I think if you have Fireball, you have to have a backwards ball cap to wear it while drinking.
I just see women in Uggs and full-length, sleeping bag jackets, I like to call them. Nuzzling in there with their sheepskin glove mittens.
Oh,
this is so nice. Like, it's a bit like, it's like, oh, it's like, maple syrup, hot chocolate, I love that. Yeah.
All right, will you make a specialty cocktail some kind to go with dinner? What is usually consumed with your Thanksgiving dinner?
Ah, that's a really good one. So we're obviously big wine drinkers, so we're always doing a good red, good white. But if I was going to do a cocktail, my favorite at the moment is, and it's going to sound a bit weird, but it's Grand Marnier with a splash of lime juice and lots of ice. And that is a really nice sipper. And you can never get, and I just think that's really, because of the oranginess of the Grand Marnier, even the Cointreau, if you have that, that's just gorgeous just to sip on while you're eating dinner. But beforehand, my go-to cocktail is the Godfather. I don't know if you've ever had that.
Tell us.
It's basically maraschino cherry, crushed at the bottom of the glass, lots of ice, and then it's one shot of amaretto and two shots of your favorite Scotch or bourbon.
Ooh, okay.
Smooth. Smooth.
I have to look into that. I still have my stash from Edinburgh, so I'm been gently distributing it for special occasions.
So tell us about that. How was that?
I love Edinburgh, Scotland. Mrs. Sosie and I were there. Well, my wife was directing a show for the Fringe Festival, so I got to be one of the chaperones to be a part of that festival, and it was great. What was surprising for me was, the culinary scene in Edinburgh is way better than I had anticipated. I had food from India, from Pakistan, from Manchuria. I had pub fare, of course, Italy. I did not have a bad meal there. I am also a staunch haggis defender, even vegetarian haggis. I adore both of them. And if Americans make fun of haggis but have eaten anything out of a Hormel can, they have no room to talk.
Well, you know, did you try a fried Mars bar or fried grape?
That I didn't do. I mean, we can get that at the state fair.
This is the funny thing. Scotland is not known for its cuisine, but everything there is. I mean, seriously, you think the Midwest is everything fried? I've seen people eat fried sneakers coming out of chip shops. The big thing that's on the rise for the last 10 years I've seen as a trend over there is that they're really up in the fish and chip game.
Yes.
By, like, they do polenta chips.
Yep.
I mean, chips are fries, everybody, but thicker, okay?
Yeah.
And actually healthier. So that's the other thing you have to remember. Because the thicker the potato, the healthier it is, because it doesn't absorb as much fat, but it's fluffier in the middle. Anyway, but people are actually going, like, there's a range of, like, polenta chips, sweet potato chips, regular potato chips. Then you get into the point of, oh, my goodness, the fish. They've got halibut. They've got sea bass. They've got cod. They've got trout. They'll fry absolutely anything. And then they change the batters up. It's a tempura batter.
Yep.
Or, paprika herb beer batter. I don't know. But they take the most bog standard comfort food and then flip in it. And I love that. I really think, and it's got to be done well.
Yeah.
If you can do that well, then away you go.
We had a fish and chips van on the site, and it was a tempura battered salmon. And I normally
oh,
would
wow.
I normally wouldn't do, I personally wouldn't do that to a piece of fish, but they did it for us, and it was, yeah, it was quite good. There was a pizza joint down the street from where we were staying, and you could get a pizza with rosemary crisps on top. Wow. I'm still looking for a bag of rosemary chips to try to do that myself. It won't be the same, but that's as close as it comes. Never had a bad drink while I was there. The craft beer scene in the UK is, you know, huge, and I just tried one thing after another. There was a new distillery that just opened from where down the street from where we were staying, so I got a bottle of gin there. I got a bottle of scotch from Stirling Castle, got a bottle of spiced mead, which I'm saving for Thursday, and I mean, it was just a great experience. And as my daughter described, every day in Scotland is leg day. A lot of hills, a lot of walking. There's the big, it's almost a mountain, but they deem it a hill, in Edinburgh, and myself and three others got to climb that. And that's the hardest thing I've done all year. And I played Falstaff last month. Just an incredible experience. I got to see Clive Anderson's one man show. I met Nina Conti, who I've been a fan of for years and years. The kids had a great time. We had a good audience. It was just an amazing experience, and we're hoping to go back in 2 years.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And that's the thing, though, and it's great for the kids, because that exposure to something like the Edinburgh Fringe is so international, so cosmopolitan, and in a city like Edinburgh, which is just so rich in history. I mean, that's the exposure kids need, especially in the arts. And I cannot believe that we ever talk about reducing budget or not giving our children opportunity to do that.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It blows my mind.
The other thing I was amazed with, I found a couple of record stores to buy stuff, and yes, I went to many taverns and pubs around town, but Scotland loves American soul music.
Oh yeah.
I kept going there waiting. I was ready for, you know, bagpipes for days. And there is some of that if you look. We actually did the, what's the giant military parade?
The marching of the colors, and then there's the Edinburgh tattoo.
We did the tattoo. We did do the tattoo. That was quite a spectacle. But many taverns I go into, and I could hear Aretha Franklin and Otis Redding and the Bar Kays. It was really fascinating. We took a bus tour up to Stirling Castle, and for the kids, I mean, these are college kids, and so some traditional folk music was played for them, some contemporary folk, but the one that got them, that they went absolutely over the moon for, was 500 Miles by the Proclaimers. And they're singing along to it, and I thought, oh yeah, this is a golden oldie to these guys. And I went to the tour guide afterwards and went, really, no Rod Stewart or Bay City Rollers? What's wrong with you?
That's too funny. But you know, there's a thing also called, there's a cultural thing in the UK called Northern Soul.
Yes.
And Northern Soul was basically during the 60s up into the 70s and the 80s, where the artists that could not get released in America were getting released in through Europe by the Beatles. So Paul McCartney was basically a record distributor for Northern Soul, for soul music.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his own tour in the UK, and then this Northern Soul was basically these amazing artists that some people would never even have heard of in the US, or maybe even very regionalized, were basically out, there was an outlet for them, and these people would go to a ballroom and have a Northern Soul night. There was a particular kind of dress, there's a particular type of dancing, and it was just a, like, well, I've got aunts that do it now, and it's kind of amazing that there was, wherever you go in the world, there's always a music that you haven't heard that comes from your own country.
Exactly.
And I'm going to say that because I didn't know who Dave Matthews was until I came to America. I didn't know who Fish was until I came to America. Because some things don't translate. Some things don't go across the pond, you know?
Right.
So we're on a road trip, and you're talking about where you're finding folk music and stuff. We're literally on a road trip, and we go back to Detroit two or three times a year, and Meg will put on a playlist, and I'll go, and she'll go, isn't this great? And I'll go, who is this? I don't know. Like, what do you mean you don't know who this is? And I'm saying, I don't, this is, I've never heard of this guy. What's this band? And the same thing comes the other way when I put my music on, and she's like, what's this? These are the boys. You know what I mean? Like, I have never heard this song either. So it's kind of weird how we have this, I guess it's the business of music, isn't it? But also, it's like you never know what, if you don't listen to that radio station, or you're not part of that that group. Sometimes you miss out on something so rich.
Yep. I think what's great about art and cooking in its own way is there's something new to discover. Like you said, there's a song. I mean, with the blues show I do on Saturdays, there's an artist, there's an album, there's a genre I haven't found yet, and I'm hoping to share that. And it would be new, a great example of what is new to my daughter, who's 18 now. She and I love the film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and because of the music in that film, she has taken a deep dive into late 60s pop music.
Right, and that's so funny that you said that, because we're now, with our kids, we're doing the same thing. Like, what was it? So Remy said to Alexa the other day, hey Alexa, T-Rex. And so Mark
no.
And he's looking for the dinosaur, but then the band comes on, and all of a sudden he's into Mark Bolan right now. Like any, like he's like, oh, play that again. But it's kind of funny that we've had a bit of Bowie, and we've had he loves AC/DC, and he loves and it's just it's like a 6-year-old journey in music, and he's just by an accident, all of a sudden comes up this classic, like, dog, you know, he's like, get it on. And it was like, oh my God, he won't stop playing it now. It's hilarious, you know.
That's great.
The dinosaur plays it, though. That's even funnier.
What I've learned from with my kid, and I pass this on, is, you know, I learned you can't shove it down their throat. If you have it laying around and they pick up on it, it works better that way. So
yeah, absolutely.
There was
you know, oh, sorry.
No, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but when we come back to food and movies,
yes.
The movie that I would say has done the best job of inspiring food and music, like what using music as a trigger to create better food, was actually the Jon Favreau movie Chef.
Yes.
I seriously play that in my kitchen nearly every day because the soundtrack of that movie is so, like, eclectic. It's just inspiring because it actually is mood music that really gives you that feeling of what you're cooking.
Yes.
It's really amazing.
We need more brass bands, New Orleans brass bands covering Marvin Gaye tunes.
Sexual Healing by that in that movie is literally, the guys, but also it's the Wild Magnolias.
Yep.
When they do their lead thing about Brother John is gone.
Yep.
Oh my God. I didn't know that type of music existed until that. And then I was like, where do I find more of this? This is it. And I play that. That's my, I like to call it my walk-on song. But when I come into the kitchen, it's like, that's it. Or it's TNT by AC/DC. Like, that's my, if I was a boxer, that's what I'd come out to.
You mentioned earlier the restaurant, which I want to get to in a sec, but I immediately thought of Dustin Hoffman telling Jon Favreau to just play the hits.
That's right. Play the hits, baby. That's what you got to do.
So I guess I'm wondering, so the tell us again, the restaurant is open now?
Well, we're just going through testing right now.
Okay.
And we will be officially soft opening on January 1st. And then February 1st is actually our official menu open. Yeah.
What do you think is going to make the menu? What do you think are going to be some of the hits?
Well, this is the intriguing thing. So I've inherited a restaurant that basically has always been known as a bar. And I said, well, what we need to do is make it, it's called Drifters because people drift in and they drift out. It's located in a hotel. So we always know that travelers, they're always drifting from place to place to place. So what we're in a very, and this is very, very, very timely. We're in this revolution of food right now where we as consumers are way, way more conscious of what we're putting in our body right now, even though when we're traveling. So we have some very, very classic. We've reinvented a burger, but I'm actually the only restaurant I think, the only restaurant that we have three completely meatless dishes. That are, we have a fantastic meatless burger. We have a fantastic meatless marinara and or meat sauce. And then we also have a wintergreen salad. It's just absolutely amazing. And it's just lashings of... I mean, I'm a big truffle oil fan, so if you put truffle oil on anything, it'll make you forget that you're eating something else, you know? I've gone very, very healthy, very... So I'm trying to revolutionize bar food at the end of the day. So you've got your comfort food, but what we're trying to do is elevate the person's expectations. So we've got some really nice pasta dishes. I've got a fantastic ratatouille on there that is ratatouille à papillote. So basically, we do it traditionally where we steam and bake the vegetables, but in the center is a beautiful spiralized bunch of spaghetti. But then what happens is you cut into it and everything is steamed.
Mm.
It looks gorgeous. The Drifter Burger is just awesome. We've partnered with a local butcher, and he makes it and seasons it for us. And then we cover it with Gouda and locally cut bacon. And as I said, we're really being very health consciously wise. So a lot of the things is we've cut down on the fried foods, but we're baking the food. So we've still got, you still got all your general fun things, but we've done a lot of Korean style cooking with our chicken wings. They're all fried, and then drained, and then we bake them off now to cook out the oil, so they're extra crispy and extra juicy inside.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun food, and the whole point is to come and share and relax, and that's the whole point. It's an occasion when you go to any bar or restaurant. It should be an occasion when you're sitting with friends, or even on your own. You should have that moment of I can indulge, but I can still be conscious.
So if you're in the Rochester area after January 1st, you can go, I guess you have the info at DannyBoom.com?
Yeah, actually that information will be released on the 1st of December. So it's at the Hilton Garden Inn in Rochester. That's our first restaurant that we'll be opening. And then and Drifters will be open. The menu will be open from the 1st of February. And then we'll also then stay tuned because there's more to come.
Yeah.
From this location and others, so I'm kind of excited.
Going back to the film Chef a little bit, have you seen the Jon Favreau Netflix series?
I did. And you know the funny thing was? I found it kind of boring.
Ah.
Cooking
for friends?
Yeah, but you know what? I like getting drunk at cooking with my friends. I don't like cooking with my friends, if you get what I mean.
Yes.
It's just standing there watching Seth Rogen nearly chop his fingers off. It's not fun for me. You know what I mean? But for other people, it's going to be interesting. And the funny thing is, the conversation of when you don't realize, like, the one episode I always go back to is the very first episode when they're in the kitchen. Seth Rogen's there with Jon Favreau and the guy, I can't remember the guy's name, the chef. Three Kings, he owns Three Kings anyway. But basically, he said 90% of being a chef is prep work, and then 10% of that is the actual execution and cooking out. And so you're watching the show and nearly 45 minutes, and they're just chopping. They didn't make anything until the very end, and then they have this nice meal. It's kind of interesting, but that's where the camaraderie comes. When you're in the kitchen, and which, talking of which, I've got to get going soon because I've got seven guys waiting for me.
All right.
But the whole thing about when you're watching shows like that is I really do hope it inspires people because we need to connect more with, there's a great Miller Lite commercial at the moment where it says, ditch the followers and go and have a beer with your friends. And it's really, really true where we put too much into our phones but then actually spending those moments having a drink and making some food and having a great meal with people. Connecting that way is so much richer than even blogging about food on your phone or taking pictures. Put your phone away. This Thanksgiving, put your phone away and enjoy the people that are in front of you. And, and I say that, I don't know if you knew this, but I lost my dad in July, and it really... this holiday is going to be very, very special to us because those people that are around you, you've got to keep remembering who's in front of you because they're going to disappear slowly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really, you really have to put value in these holidays and these moments with each other. So don't put away all the grimaceness. Don't worry about if Aunt Shirley didn't make the right bean casserole or Uncle Fred got drunk and insulted somebody. Just remember all those moments with those people, because that's the most important time around a table. Because a family that eats together stays together.
Yes. What was a favorite film of your dad's?
He was quite an eclectic kind of guy. Let's put it like that. He was, if you know my personality, times it by 100. And he thought Daffy Duck was hilarious when the bomb went off and his beak used to fall off. That was my dad's sense of humor. But then movie-wise, it was kind of funny because the greatest movie memory I have with my dad was actually watching The Goonies.
Really?
Yeah. Because it was the first time he'd really looked after me and my sister, and he said, and he thought it would be a great idea to take us to the movie, and it would be easy babysitting, because we'd go, you know, my dad's a very, very internationally renowned hairdresser, and he was very, very busy all the time. So when he had these moments with him, he was always like, okay, I want to do something that's going to, we're all going to enjoy, and it's going to be easy for everybody. So he went to the movies, and he, I don't know if you remember the old movies, but the seats used to flip up and flip down.
Oh, yeah.
And so we got a big gulp soda and some Skittles and stuff. And I'll never forget that he opened this, and this is an old, in England, the theaters are old. So this was a 1930s movie theater, and everything was wood. And I'll never forget, he opens the Skittles, and the Skittles all fall down the stairs. You can imagine what they all sound like. All go down, just as the movie's about to start. And everyone's going, shh, it's quiet. So the next minute, my sister bends down to pick up the soda, and the seat flips up, and the soda goes, she goes to sit back down, and the soda goes all over my sister.
Oh, jeez.
And my dad is on the floor laughing, I'm on the floor laughing, my sister's crying, and the movie hasn't even begun. So that was the very first part of that movie. But the greatest thing about The Goonies was Chunk in the freezer with the dead guy. And I'm going to tell you now, in all movie history, I think that is one of the most underrated comedy scenes ever, where Chunk is stuck in a freezer with a dead body, and the dead body keeps falling on top of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I still to this day, my sister and I do that to each other. We corpse each other and just fall on each other until you keep pushing them away. And it makes me crack up. Mm. It does.
Did your father know the film Shampoo?
Oh, Shampoo and Hair. My dad he modeled himself off...
Warren Beatty?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, he had the open shirt, the long hair, the everything in that day. He was the man. He was the absolute man. So, and actually, the funny thing is, going back to the soul music and everything,
yeah.
My dad was the only white guy to work in a black salon in London. In the late 60s, early 70s.
Oh, my gosh.
And a salon called Splinters. And he would do Diana Ross's hair, Laddie Siffrey's hair, Stevie Wonder's hair. They would all come in. And as an apprentice, they would tip him signed albums. In our attic at home, we found a suitcase filled with soul, R&B, classics, like Everybody Is Anybody at that time, the Frontiers, the Temptations, all signed albums as tips, and they're all in our attic upstairs.
Wow.
From the original members. Absolutely incredible. We even had one of the Rolling Stones as well.
Jeez, that's a treasure.
Yeah, and, you know, so that was that's the kids' college fund right now.
I would say decor for your restaurant, but it's your stuff, man. So,
the truth of all restaurants is don't open a restaurant with your own money.
Yes, and the second rule, and the third rule,
and the third rule. You know, they say the quickest way to make $1 million in the restaurant industry is start with $2 million.
Well, we're fingers crossed for you upstate.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've had it, but we had a great, you know, this is going to be a great family holiday for us this year, because we've got, obviously, the kids' godparents are coming up to spend Thanksgiving, but it's also, nobly, we had a third child now, so we have Remy's 6, Theo is 3, And we have Novalee in June, and it's going to be great to have her first holiday here. So she's going to be 6 months over the holiday. So it's going to be amazing, you know.
See, and that's it's kind of a circle of life of one departure, one arrival. When a month after Emma was born was when George Harrison died. And I've always had a spiritual understanding, or at least a connection, I thought, with the Quiet One. And so for months and months on end, I would pick up Emma and we would dance to Give Me Love, Give Me Peace on Earth. So much so that I told Emma, I said, when if you get married, this is going to be our dance. And I think she's grudgingly agreed to it. So we'll see when that happens.
Well, you know, I'd say, Matt, I'm paying for it. You're dancing to my thing, lady. That's what I'd say.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see where the traditions are on the father of the the roles of the father of the bride, the mother of the bride. I believe in Steel Magnolias that the joke is Sally Field says that all abuse is put upon the mother of the bride. I don't think she wants that.
So, buddy, I'm going to have to make a move, unfortunately.
That's okay. I'm just glad we finally got this time. It's always a pleasure to have you on the phone. And, of course, folks, DannyBoom with an M.com for all the information about Better Fed Project and Food Detectives and the restaurant and Cranberry Salsa and you know, Maple Leaf updates, all there at DannyBoom.com.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I wish everybody an amazing holidays, amazing Thanksgiving. Remember, you dictate the pace in your kitchen. Make what you want to make. Everybody's going to appreciate everything that you do. And remember, delegate all those jobs so you take the pressure off yourself and enjoy your holiday. Because it's only one day that you get with your family sometimes. So enjoy it all.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, Danny.
Happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
If you made it to the end of this show, thank you for listening. I take full responsibility for the sound. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Happy Thanksgiving, California. Happy Thanksgiving, Fort Myers. Happy Thanksgiving, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!